nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
This week's topic is opportunities in nanotechnology. You guys know who I am already, and I wanted to introduce my colleague and let him say a few words about himself. His name is Tony D'Alessio, and he's from upstate New York. I mean, really upstate New York. So, Tony, why don't you just share a few words about yourself there?
Hi. I work at Erie Community College, Buffalo, New York area. We're also having a great day. I'm looking out the window at the balcony. It's about 50 degrees right now. My background is electrical engineering. I used to teach in the electrical engineering technology department. And after attending the Penn State workshops, 2014, I think, we started a program, got grant funding for a clean room that had been sort of running ever since.
So I'm going to start today's opportunity session now. I'm going to remind everybody, opportunities in nano are out there, and that nano is all around us. You've seen this slide many, many times. I know that this slide, I remember when I got it at a conference in Albany, New York in 2009. I said I had to have that slide because basically it said, and at that time, these were cutting edge stuff that was out there. People have been using this quite a bit since then, but basically nano is all around us. And I would say to you right now, if you look around the room you're in, wherever you are, there's nanotechnology in that room. You can basically challenge yourself to find nano in things that are around you. And I would guarantee that, actually, I know it is because you're looking at a computer right now. You're looking at a phone or a computer. So I'm 100% sure that there's nanotechnology there, but it might be in your shirts or your clothing or your or anything around you. There's tons of things that are out there with nanotechnology. And this is a great slide to introduce this to into classrooms. So I did take a couple of moments this week to kind of look at what some of the areas that we talked about in the first five sessions and created this little mural of where nanotechnology is. And you can see some of the things that we talked about this week. You remember we talked about diagnostics in COVID testing and materials. I believe Peter shared about materials in cars. And that was just one example of the many areas. Drug delivery. I know that Matersh shared about drug delivery, and as well as Jared talked about drug delivery. And there was a question. I know in the questions is COVID the only place where this stuff is going on in the app? So answer is absolutely not. We can talk about that later. It's all over the place in drug delivery. Textiles, the hydrophobic clothing we talked about, basic research. I believe that Wes shared about this, talking about the SPM, but that's just one area. It's all over the place. Household products, all through and through. Environment, basically in water, clean water, water filtration, pollution remediation, whatever you want to think about nanotechnologies being utilized. Energy, both current energy sources as well as future energy sources. Nanotechnology is wrapped throughout those areas. And then in microelectronics, that was shared throughout the first sessions as well as the subsequent sessions and, moving into the future on quantum dots and so on like that. And then biomimicry, basically looking at nature and then actually copying it because we have the tools to be able to look at nature and be able to move things forward, like ketchup bottles that don't actually, have the ketchup stay in the bottle, which is good for the environment too. So, okay. All right. So why your students should know this, you guys talked about this, if you remember, on one of the first week's Jamboard. Mario led this discussion on why your students should know this. And you can remember, this is what you people said Obviously, you came into the class with a lot of knowledge already, many of you. Some, I'm sure there was a whole distribution of knowledge coming in. But you can see, I love a lot of these. It's in almost everything we make. There are jobs, jobs, jobs. The wow effect, things that are out there. They want to prepare the students for the future. But I got to say, the favorite one that I had is the one that talked about it's the plastics of the 21st century. So the other reason we do this is basically it's out there. I mean, you know, this is the government's, the NNI, National Nanotechnology Initiative. You can actually, this is a great site here, nano.gov. It actually is pretty, got all kinds of nanotechnology resources. I don't even know if we talked about this during this workshop, but nano.gov is one I would definitely, if you're interested in looking at resources and things, that's another place to go. But this is, I think it's a 2014 vision. Basically it's a future to which the ability to understand and control matter at the nanoscale leads to a revolution in technology and industry that benefits society. And all these area, all these alphabet agencies on the outside of this that circles this slide, this is actually Lisa Friedersdorf's slide that she gave me many years ago. Actually, all of them have national nanotechnology initiatives. And why do they have them? Because they need to have them. It's the future, basically. They're all working in this area. And they do have an area, the area that the NNI, that is actually leading this umbrella organization for the country. And it's the goals are, we want to be, you know, basically leading the world in research and development. We want to turn that research and development into products, make stuff, and keep the economic engines of the country and the world moving. And then this is where, you know, you folks come in is the skilled resources. The skilled resources are the workforce that we have, that we're training to be able to be nano literate, if you will, at various levels. It could be at the, you know, just the understanding and awareness, and then it could be the people that are actually working directly in the field. And I would submit that if you're working anywhere in technology or manufacturing or wherever it is, you're going to be working with something at the nano scale, be it the product you are making, or the processes you're working on, or the tool sets that are coming into your area are going to be nano enhanced in some way as time moves along. So, and the other part of it is the infrastructure, the tool sets. You saw some of them in the fabrication and characterization areas, plus all the other areas, the bottom up, top down, all the other areas there. The tool sets that are out there for nanotechnology are, you know, a raft in there. And then also we want this to be done responsibly. We don't want any environmental health or safety issues. And we spend a lot of time on that in our educational programs across the country, making sure that people are aware of the potential issues and not taking any shortcuts for themselves or for basically the community at large, which is basically everyone. Okay. This is a slide that was created by, I thought it was really cool. Is actually, this is why we shared it. We could have shared a lot of different slides on where is nanotechnology going and how much, you know, how much money is it going. And this is, I'm not sure that everything on here is a fact. It was done by high schoolers. Okay. But they created this based on research, and they went to this Allied Market Research site. And this is Mariel's students came up with this. It looks like a couple years ago, 2018. I think the cool thing is this graph on the right side saying where things are going. Basically the cost of the technology is going to be going down, and the problems are going to be going down. And the adoption of nano is going to be going up. Self-powered devices are going up, and government funding is going to be going up. If you look at this graph and look at the interpretation of these graphs, and you could see some of the areas where they said nanotechnology was going to be growing, this one website. So,
Bob, just quick comment. You know, a nano drug, you know, could be worth $1 or $2 billion on its own. So I'm not sure, you know, the two.
Yeah, yeah. I think these numbers are very, 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 very modest, if you will. So yeah. I think I think right now, I think that, you know, if you counted COVID remediation, think about the amount of money that's being made right now by the Pfizer's, Moderna's, and J&J's.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't buy the stock. I should have bought the stock. Last February. Okay. You're right, Jeeve. So your suggestion is that they are actually very low.
It's much bigger than that. It's much
absolutely
bigger than that.
Absolutely. So, and there are there's all kinds of forecasts out there. This was done by a high school group, but I just wanted to. That's why I wanted to give the references to where this came from. Okay, and this is probably a better predictor of where things are going. And this is by Mihail Roko. Who is one of the founders of the NNI. Works at the NSF. I think he's still there. By 2020, 70% of all new advanced technology products will incorporate nanotechnology. I'm not sure how exactly you measure that, but that was the prediction by he, and he's been pretty prescient in some of the areas where he said things were going, because, I mean, I think I met him in like 2005, and he was pretty impressive then and continued to be throughout the times that I've been able to interact with this man. So as the market expands, the number of jobs needing different skills in nanotechnology will increase. And it's essential that a sufficient supply of qualified workers be developed to fill that need. And I think one of the things I want to stress to people, and I think I said it in the first week, it's not just the future PhD scientists that we're talking about. We're talking about people all along the educational pathway. So don't just look to the student that is the future, you know, the top end of your classroom for the people that you want to become aware and explain the opportunities that are out there. You know, we have people that we've taught that are within, and Terry, I should say, Terry and Oscar and our programs here that are definitely future PhDs or already PhDs. But we also have some that, you know, probably in past days would have been said, hey, we're just going to go, you know, we're going to find a place for this guy or gal to go, but they're not necessarily going to be the top end of the academic pyramid. But there are jobs out there and there are careers out there for them in nanotechnology. So please don't ignore that group of people. I know you guys are here spending your time. You guys are those type of educators that are looking at the entire population of your classrooms. So, and this is an example of that. We're not going to show this because it's 7 minutes long. So we're not going to go through a whole 7 minute video here, but I really want to. This is done, I think, in the summer of 2015, and we did it for our NSF ATE Center, the NAC Center. Indiana, Texas, and then we went out to Seattle. And actually, I believe Peter was out at Seattle at that time and is on this video. He has some outstanding comments as a part of this video, and it's still very relevant today. From a standpoint of you know, kind of what is said in here. And if you want to kind of get fired up about, you know, what are the opportunities are, we went to people who have gone through programs. They were actually educational programs at the ATE level or community college level in these areas. Peter was at North Seattle College at the time. He went to Northwest Vista, and we went to Ivy Tech. And we actually talked to these people, students who have graduated from the program or in the program, as well as alumni of the program, as well as educators like Peter at that time at North Seattle. And then we also talked to industry and talked about where the future is going. So it's a really I think it's a good use of 7 minutes of your time if you have not looked at it yet. So workforce readiness. One thing I wanted to, I did cover this earlier, and again, I'm just trying to reinforce this time, is that we do, as part of our national center efforts, we have created international credentialing. And again, some of the folks in this room, like Peter and Tony and others, have been a part of this creation of these standards that we created. What should we be teaching to students in the four different areas of nanotechnology, and we broke them up into six different standards. So if you are actually working in a university or community college, Please do not start with a blank sheet of paper. We have what should be taught based upon industry, government, and educators across the country. And you work through an organization called ASTM International, which is, again, it's an international standards organization. And we created these six standards in health and safety, in characterization, pattern generation, infrastructure, material synthesis and processing, and material properties and effects of size. And these are out there for what should be taught within these programs that you might be creating. And you might be creating just the characterization and you want to call it a nanotechnology characterization program. Perhaps you might want to look at the standard and see what's in the standard and then actually, teach to the, make sure you're teaching to the standard, not just maybe what you're getting from one person or, you know, whatever. This is a collection of all of people across the country as to what should be taught in here. And the key to that is that what does industry want? You know, what do they want when people come out of programs? So, right now we're in the process, we're kind of working at a glacial pace, but we're getting there. we're creating certificates in nanotechnology. We have created two, which are the health and safety and characterization certificates. And what these are certificates where a student who comes out of a program, say at Erie Community College, where Tony is, can test for the characterization certificate and see how they did, what did they, they can actually pay $50 or whatever it is, take the test. And then they have this characterization certificate if they pass the certificate. And what we are doing now is creating the other two. We're in the process of creating the fabrication and processing certificate, getting closer on that one. And then we'll do the last one, materials, properties, effects of size. So what these certificates will do is we want to get awareness of these. We have some awareness already, but we want to get general awareness out there with the hiring agencies so they know these folks exist that have these certificates. And there we have had some people who are already in industry say, I want to take that test, or I'm already an educator. I want to take that test, see how I do. So that might open some doors and opportunities for me in the future. So it's kind of one of those in the process of creating this infrastructure, and we're in the, if we build it, they will come stage to create some awareness around this. And again, some infrastructure for prevent it from becoming the Wild West out there in what people are teaching. And again, I just mentioned this. Hopefully people will know that they've attained the knowledge once they get through these certificates. The students that come out of these programs will really know their stuff. Other areas that are other places that are creating not certificates, but micro credentials. And we're talking about doing this in other areas, but Southwest, now it's called, it's not Systems for Micro, Center for Microsystem Education. Is that what it's called?
It's Peter, the support center for micro systems education, I think.
Okay. Yeah. They changed their name.
Right. When they became, they became a resource center and changed it, I think, to support center.
Thank you. Thank
so
you.
They kept the same acronym.
Right. So they have some digital badges, basically micro credentials, if you will, or not digital badges. I think they're micro credentials that you can earn. They have a lot of online materials, and these are a couple of them that they have in MEMS fabrication, BioMEMS, and MEMS foundations. And there are these, and there's other examples of those across the country where you can earn micro credentials or badges in these areas. So
I'm just going to jump in for a second, Bob.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just to let everybody know, we're going to delve into micro credentials, and there's differences between workforce micro credentials and academic micro credentials. So we're going to get to this later. So we'll cover it in depth, probably exhaustively. So we'll get to it. If you're not sure what micro credentials are, we will be getting to it today.
Fantastic. Thanks, Tony. A couple of minutes, actually. All right. So the other thing I want to tell you is that the value of you know, having these degrees, and this is, we just did this as a snapshot from our, we try to figure out where our students are going from our 18 credit capstone semester that we do in Pennsylvania. And some of these students may have been Randy's from a way back when, where they went to work over time. And we, the, we did some, a couple of surveys on this. And then we, now we get, you know, we try to get the students when they leave, they may leave our area and then go get a job somewhere, or they go on for two years or six more years of schooling. And we try to figure out where they went. These are the companies where they, or I should say institutions where they went, because they could be companies, government organizations, could be educational institutions and so on. Of the people that we've had, this is the eye chart of where they went to work. And the commonality of this is, there is no commonality, is that these guys go to all different types of industry sectors, and they work in all different areas. And one of the criteria for getting on this list is, yes, they're doing work with some of the stuff that they learned in the capstone semester here at Penn State, that was a value to them to be in this job, and the work they're doing is working in this area, in this regime. So I think that's a pretty nice list of folks, and it's a nice, just shows the value of this. And again, this has been going on for quite a while, the creation of these. I know we started this at least, I think, in 2004, you know, and a little bit before that, we had about 8 companies on before that. Now we've got, I think, 170 companies. So, and this is, we did this survey, I think it was 8 or 9 years ago, of folks. And this is some of the entree level job descriptions. Just the other day, somebody asked, like, what is the job title for, you know, people who are getting out with, you know, nano degrees? And the answer is, you name it, they're all over the place. People are not calling their people that come into their workforce nano engineering technicians or nanotechs or anything like that. They're calling them, you know, there are a couple micro nano things. There's a micro fabrication tech, nano biotech. There's a couple there in the center column, but most of them are kind of their standard names. So this is the kind of things people say, what should I look for? Well, that's a really great question. You know, they're the job titles are all over the map. That was back again 8 or 9 years ago, but I believe it's similar today. I don't think people are calling them their workers nanotechnicians, or there's very few that are calling them that. That was a point that I just wanted to make. If you say, "Oh, I want to go out there, make sure that what are the opportunities for my students?" They'll be in many different areas. I'm going to turn the reins over now to Tony, who's going to talk a little bit about opportunities for the classroom.
So we have some highlighted resources for K-12 from Joyce Palmer Allen. She's somebody you've dealt with more than.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about this. This is as you can see the date on this. This is January 31st, 2014. Joyce worked at that time, as you can see, as the assistant education coordinator for the NNIN. Which is a group of universities across the country. She worked with Nancy Healy there and a couple of other fine people. We got her to, she's actually a former high school teacher, master teacher in physics from Georgia. She teaches basically any kind of secondary science. She's actually taught middle school too. But she created this resource list, and it's kind of interesting. I think Renee was here when we created this, and we said, "Oh, we for our webinars, we like to create like a handout of kind of resources to be able to share with folks that are, you know, attending this webinar." And so, most of the handouts we got were like maybe one page, sometimes two pages, you know, basically double-sided. If you go here, she created an A to Z list of 14 pages of material. So if you have not looked at this resource list, I would highly recommend you take a look at this this list that's in our resources from this website. And I wanted to make sure you folks did see that. I wanted to highlight that because it is an outstanding resource for folks to take a look at, and you can then go out to links. I'm not going to guarantee that every link that's there is still working, but there are great resources there. So go ahead, Tony.
There's lots of good information there. Videos, things you can show your class, things you can give as assignments. It's fantastic, and they're geared for K-12, so it's good stuff. And then Mariel has her favorites that she developed, and there's a PDF link there. I just, you know, there's activities, there's, you know, based on topic, there's a lot of good stuff here.
Yeah, it's fabrication, it's everything we went through during this workshop. You can kind of supplement with these resources that are here, and it really is a part of the things that she teaches. These are a lot of the activity that she shares in her she's culled that she over the years that she's using within her workshops. And what's kind of funny about it is when we started this workshop, I don't know if she's Mariel's here today. She says, I wasn't aware of that handout of
Joyce's.
Yeah. And she says, oh my God, that's a great resource. So she said she's going to go back and see if there's any resources in there that she'd like to be able, she'll be putting into her classroom. So you're constantly learning there. So
one of the great things about these resources is these folks, Mariel and Joyce, have already sort of vetted them for you, right? To make sure that the level is appropriate. You know, one of the feedback we've gotten, or I've gotten personally, since I started doing Nano 14, 15 from local high schools that I worked with is, you know, one of their biggest challenges was finding appropriate level resources for their particular grade level, right? So these have already sort of been vetted for K-12 or high school or whatever, right? So it saves you some time of going through them as an educator, right? So it's a great place to start without doing all the work yourself. And then here's a breakdown that recently came in from NanoHub. And I want to say Purdue, Bob. Am I wrong?
You are absolutely correct.
Okay.
We've been working with them. You have too, right?
Right. I always forget. I know they're in Indiana somewhere.
Yeah. This is one that Renee and I and Oscar, I think, were talking to NanoHub. This is a recreation of something that was done by NNCI. Actually NNIN by Joyce and Nancy Healy. They created a matrix that was on the NNIN site. And I always thought it was fabulous. And then when NNIN went away, it kind of went into disrepair. Joe from, don't ask me to pronounce his last name. Joe actually shared it with us a couple weeks ago. And I asked him if it was okay to share this with this group, because it's really a work in progress. He's taking some of the NNIN and NNCI stuff and putting it into a matrix. And let me show you that matrix here. I think could be very, very valuable. You're just looking for an exercise. And he calls it a bingo card. I call it a matrix. But, you know, you want to, you are a high school or a middle school biology teacher, and you want to find something for your classroom to work in Nano. You'll look at here and you'll see 8 different things that have been created. And they've been created. The cool thing about this is that they were created by educators. A lot of them were created in RETs that NNIN or NNCI have been running across the country for many, many years. So there are people like you who are kind of the 3 and 4 sigma teachers that want to really bring things into their classrooms. You can kind of pick any area you want to on that chart and be able to find activities for your classroom, or then take them and modify them for yourselves. So the key is that I thought this was a great matrix of stuff that's out there for folks. Hopefully you guys will utilize it, and it's all the way up through You know, the on the any undergrad, you know, grades, you know, 13 through 16, plus some things you might want to use out in the community. I shared this with one of our partners down in at Norfolk State just last week because he was doing some outreach, and I said, you really don't want to go with him. He wasn't aware of some of the resources that were out there. So this is a great, I think it's a great resource. And, oh, thanks, Michelle. She's been using this. Michelle, you want to say anything about it?
No, I just I really like the lessons that are on this website. I find them super easy to use, helpful. A lot of the things you don't need to have special materials for. And I was able to take a lot of the graphics and different things and put them into Jamboards or make them, you know, virtually friendly. It was not too difficult to do. But this matrix is going to be so much easier to sort than trying to go to the website. Because like if you hit the back button, it gets rid of your search and you have to kind of start all over again.
Right, right. It has a listing of by those areas, how many they classified in. And Joe is just using keywords that were put into each of these activities to be able to find them. And we're going to actually be doing something with some of our materials that we have. A lot of us are migrating a lot of our materials to a NanoHub, and we'll talk about those later.
Yeah, NanoHub in the past was like drinking from a fire hose. You'd go on the site and there were just thousands of things and they were not sorted. You know, you had to go through them to find what was appropriate for the group you were trying to educate. So they've been doing a really good job lately of making it more searchable and sortable. And the other thing I wanted to mention that Bob kind of threw it out there, but didn't really talk about it, was what an RET is. So he said some of those were developed on RETs. We're going to talk about RETs later. But that's an opportunity. That's a program through the National Science Foundation called the Research Experience for Teachers, where research universities bring in K through 12 or community college teachers. For typically a 5-week research experience over the summer. And then you have materials to present back in your classroom when you complete it. So we have some other ATE resources. That's the Advanced Technological Education Program from NSF on NanoHub. So there were a number of centers that were funded years ago that no longer exist, but their great work still exists. And those are the things we want to point out. So obviously, Penn State's network, the NAC network that we're a part of right now, we're placing things there. Matt Plyle at the University of New Mexico, that's his support center for microsystems education. So we had it, Bob. It was just two slides too late, or three slides too late, right? Is posting things there as well as their own website. NeoTech was the Northeast Advanced Technological Education Center, which at the time was at Hudson Valley, and now they're at SUNY Polytechnique. They're posting there. NanoLink was at Dakota County Technical College in Minneapolis area, Minnesota. Peter's old stomping grounds was Shine up in Seattle. That was their NSF project. And then there's just, you know, a plethora of resources there. So
great. And the other thing I wanted to point out is that we have the our resources, the NAC resources. We put a bunch of them there and upgraded resources to the NanoHub area and work with the folks at NanoHub at Purdue. But we also have a bunch of resources on our nanoforme.org site, as well as the cnau.psu. So if you wanted a program in, you know, undergrad, community college, nano, workforce education, we have the whole thing available to you on our, right on our site and ready for you to go to learn from, at least. So.
Right.
I pulled out from some of the activities, some of the things that are out there, people have had for text and resources. And they're at various levels. You know, there's the Ratner brothers or cousins. I don't know who they are. Maybe Terry knows, but it's a general introduction to the next big idea. We use that. We've used that text within our work here. Nanoscale activities for a grade 6 to 12. I pulled this from Mariel's She uses this resource. I've seen this book, this NSDA book. It costs like $3 or something like that. It's kind of crazy. Joyce Palmer actually really likes this book, The Big Ideas of Nanoscale Science and Engineering, a guidebook for secondary teachers. And she's been using this for years. And it's really a good book from basically saying, you know, some of the you know, facts about nano and some of the legends that are not necessarily true and how things should be taught or things should not be taught. So I think it's a really good introductory text for high school teachers. And then, of course, there's Nanotechnology for Dummies, which when I first moved into this job, Terry and Oscar insisted that I actually read this book because they said it was about my level. You can laugh, Tony. It's okay.
All right. I was just muted.
And then Wes's book that we mentioned earlier, this really was, he really did come to the workshop. I wasn't kidding when I mentioned it earlier and said, what is the, you know, we're at the community technical college level. Where's the book for coursework at that level? And we said, there really isn't one that's really that great. You're going to have to steal from here or steal from there. And he wrote it. So, and I think it's very good. It's very good from a standpoint of giving the basics for coursework in nano, you know, technician level. And then Deb Newberry just created a book called Nanotechnology Past and Present. So that one I would I encourage you to take a look at also. So,
all right. So our very own RAIN network. So these are remotely accessible instruments for nano that you can all access from your local site. So we, as you can see by this list, there are, wow, this has grown a lot. There are a lot of, there's, believe it or not, there are everything from high schools, community colleges, to R1 research universities on this list, all making their instruments available. So if we'll get to the list in a moment, but you know, these are obviously, if you look at the map, these are geographically spread out. So you can absolutely find folks in your time zone. And you know, if you want to access something or you're running an event, you can arrange with more than one school to be on or to cover a time period if you would like. Everything from characterization equipment primarily to some fabrication equipment. It really is a great community. Everybody shares their time and resources freely right now, which is fantastic. Bob, when did you guys start this?
Well, officially we actually started doing remote. Maybe Terry remembers. I think it was 2008 or so when we started doing it. And actually we were doing it to do work with our partners across Pennsylvania. We're located in the center of Pennsylvania, and to go down and we'll go to Philadelphia where Randy is, it's about a three and a half hour drive. So we said, what can we do to bring some of this to classrooms in, you know, to do some recruitment to folks? And so we started this, and we had some very industrious people. Bill Mahoney, I think, was the first person who started working on this. One of the people that works here now works at the NanoFab. And we created, how can we make things remote? And this is before Zoom and before this other stuff. So it was a hodgepodge of things, and we started working on it. And then we actually started going national in 2013. And then when we went out to Seattle, actually we worked with, the group out there. I think that was 2015, I believe. Was that right, Peter? Do I have that right? 14, 15?
Yeah, I think so. It was right after, we got our scanning electron microscope. We wanted to be part of the network like right away.
Yeah, so we became that's when we actually started an actually national effort, if you will. And we started with Erie and about six different institutions, and I believe we're now up to 26 or something. Now not all of them are super, super active. Some of them are there, are kind of on the list in name only, if you will. You know, oh yeah, they do something once a year or something. But usually if they're challenged, they're asked, they will help. They will help out.
Right. And each of these schools has a limited number of tools that are available. I mean, so depending on the technology you're trying to access, it will limit how many are available. Here are some of the instruments. As you can see, scanning electron microscopes probably has the largest number of instruments available. AFMs are pretty good, atomic force microscopes, at scanning force or scanning probe microscopes. Wes talked about those. Surface profilers, we're adding a few more, I think. I think Nancy Luaggi's adding hers. I believe from Normandale Community College soon, so there'll be another one there. Spectrophotometers, optical microscopes. So there's a lot of cool instruments here. And I just want to quickly mention, because I'm going to talk about this in a little bit and some applications of it, is the energy dispersive spectroscopy, EDS, that allows you to do an elemental analysis of a sample. And we'll talk about that in a bit coming up.
Cool.
So basically, you go to the link on the slide. You can choose a school, fill out a form, make a request to access an instrument. If the site can handle your request, they will set up sort of a preview with you as an instructor to run you through the remote access access process and make sure everything is sort of smooth prior to your class activating it. And be aware that we are literally going to pass the control panel to your local computer. So whether it's you as an instructor or your students are literally going to take control of that instrument, and you will be on a video link, and there will be a technician available at the instrument. So if you get things, you know, way off kilter, you know, they'll bring it back in and pass it back to you. So this is a great way to give your students a little bit of hands-on time on some expensive instruments.
Great.
Bob, I'm looking at the, so I'm going to rely on some of you because my technician handle the remote access. So there was a question in chat, is it possible to share the screen to Zoom? Yes, you're literally, we're going to pass control of our screen on the instrument to you. And you are going to control that instrument.
During the remote access.
Exactly. Right. Now, based on some of the feedback, and I think Eves is on this call, some of the instruments, Zoom doesn't work. People have found other applications, whether it's Teams or TeamViewer or something else. Okay, I'm sorry, Eves. I just saw your comment in the chat as well. So there's, you know, it depending on the instrument really depends on how you're going to access it. Not everything is Zoom compatible, is what we've been finding. So I just want to make everybody aware of that. But if you contact the school, they'll work with you to make sure that, if possible, you can access that remotely. Become a part of the MNT community. There's the Micro Nanotech Education Special Interest Group, mntsig.net. We're always looking for new members. We have a number of committees. I think that's the next slide, Bob.
Yep. So
if you want to join a working group, you know, we have a group for professional development. We have a group working on curriculum at different levels, a group working on outreach and recruitment. We have a group on industry, working with industry, and a group on distance education.
Tony, why don't you take on the high school?
Yeah, we've got opportunities for high schools. So traditionally, you know, most teachers try to integrate it into earth science, chemistry, biophysics. Those are sort of the easy, low-hanging fruit. You can do laboratories, are possible via remote access or a combination of in-class and remote, meaning you can have your class do something in a chemistry lab, for example, and then send things to be imaged or characterized to one of the range sites. And then we can actually show your students their results like the following week or 2 weeks later or whatever. So here in New York, we've got some high schools that actually have almost as much characterization equipment as we do. And they're actually doing things with their career and voc ed type programs rather than the college bound students. So they have a forensics program and we're back to the EDS thing. So, you know, it used to be years ago to do gunshot residue tests, they looked for nitrates. It was a simple test. Now they actually look at the chemical breakdown and I forget which it is. It's either antimony or bismuth that they look for to tell if it's gunshot residue. There's a construction and building trades program where they actually look for, sulfur present in, drywall or sheetrock. They, if you remember about, 5-10 years ago, there were a lot of construction materials coming in from China that were high in sulfur and they were outgassing in people's homes and making them unlivable. So, it's a way to bring in sort of all these trades. They've cut the ends off of end mills in a machining program and looked at the cutting edge, of a new and a used bit to see what the differences are. They had a beauty program. They actually had the women in the program yank a hair, put it under an SEM, look at it. And then each one was assigned a different hair care product. And then every week they pluck a hair and look at it under an SEM. So there's lots of sort of other ways you can introduce non-college bound students to the nano technology and just, give them some exposure to it and how it might apply to their field. So academic micro-credentials, I wish I had a little bit more time. I know we're running short, but I shouldn't say almost every, here in the Northeast, most states have some form of advanced studies or early college, high school, the names vary, where high school students can take courses for college credit. So it's possible that they can earn a micro credential in a technology area, whether it's from a local college or remote access from another region or another state. And we'll talk more about that later. In a college, you can add this into a course, you can add it as a module, you can add multiple modules, you can add remote laboratories, you can create courses and sorts of the traditional technology majors, electrical, mechanical, manufacturing, biotech, engineering science, the hard sciences. There's lots of opportunities for that. There's lots of labs that have been created, lectures that have been created you could use. So I want to spend, I'll try and keep this to a minute or two, but more university systems are implementing a micro-credential policy. So I'm in New York, the State University in New York system. A couple of years ago defined micro-credentials as something being less than a one-year certificate. So they can be between 6 and 23 credit hours of study. They can and should be stackable towards a registered certificate or degree program. They should be validated by industry. So industry should say, if somebody had these two courses, we could hire them on an entry-level job. And some of the first ones in New York State were actually culinary micro-credentials, a ServSafe certification with some basic prep work. And they were getting hired, to do basic prep at restaurants and supermarkets and things like that. The nice thing is it only needs to be approved at the individual campus through traditional governance. So you do not need SUNY or state approval in our case for these. But the biggest benefit is this award shows up on the student's transcript. So, in the past, if a student took three courses and dropped out, there were three courses on their transcript. if they take three courses towards a micro credential, it will show that they completed a micro credential in that topical area. So that's a bonus. It really is a big bonus for students. So certificate programs, typically in most states, it's 1 year of study, 24 to 30 credit hours. And these are just some examples. I won't go through them all, but I tried to choose different types of programs in different states, right? Just to give you an idea, these tend to be based on whatever local industry needs. So we got MEMS in Ohio, microscopy in Utah, vacuum tech in Minnesota, et cetera. So these are just examples of the types of one-year certificate programs that exist. Associate degrees, you know, I chose a few other different ones, again, in different states, different parts of the country. You know, depending on what's going on in your region, is going to determine what type of program you should add. It's hard to justify building a new program if you have no industry in your area. You at least need it in your state before somebody's probably going to approve a program. If anybody's got questions on any of the stuff near the end, contact me, contact Bob, contact anybody. Wes is here. He's got certificate and degree programs. Peter does. You know, any of us would be more than happy to answer questions if you're looking to integrate something at the college level.